How is everyone? Do you all get to drink wine at your jobs? Right now?
Drink wine.
Terrific. Our session today is all about IE. And a little brief introduction to the two of us. We've been presenting together for the past several years. So who I am, my name is Chris Jackson, and I'm the worldwide lead for enterprise application compatibility, which means really kind of a two-way street. Number one, helping to make sure that I represent your interests to the product team so they don't do stupid things that make you angry. And then vice versa, as I'm talking to you to find that out, so I spend a lot of time in airplanes, also passing along as many best practices as I possibly can based upon what I learned from everybody else. So I've talked in person, on site, to more than 500 different customers in more than 60 countries. And then I get on the phone all the time with people just to kind of chat through and really understand the impact of the decisions we make and how to craft the right enterprise strategy.
Hmm. My name's Alan Birchall. So I've been speaking at TechEd for a number of years now. Who's ever been to one of my sessions? Okay, I hope it was good.
Who liked them?
Oh, very good. Excellent. Okay. I work for Avanart Australia, so I'm from Brisbane. I'm an IT consultant, is my technical title, but what in reality I do is I am the Active Directory Administrator for a large multinational company, which will remain nameless. But I'm my night job, that's my day job, my night job is I'm the author-in-chief of the Group Policy Central website, which is an awesome website, as you just saw, that had lots of resources on it. And I'm going to just give this a plug. So everything I'm talking about here today with this is on my website. This is my website, Group Policy Central. You can go to it by grouppolicy.biz. But if you're really cutting edge, you can also go to a new URL called grouppolicy.computer. Top-level domain name. I was like, I didn't even know that worked. But yes, I registered it and I got it. So if you're trying to remember it, it's grouppolicy.computer. You can go there, you can subscribe, follow, all that sort of stuff. So if you're after links and references, you'll be able to download either the slide that has lots of links, or you could just go to my website and just stay up to date forever and a day after that. So I'm a Group Policy MVP as well. Group Policy is definitely my passion, but Internet Explorer is also one of my passions. So when the Group Policy, you know, there's over 1,000 Group Policy settings in Internet Explorer, I spend a lot of time looking at the Group Policy settings for Internet Explorer. And this is why we're here today, to talk about Internet Explorer and how to manage it with Group Policy and the new things you can do with Group Policy to make your life easier. So.
Great. All right. So I'm going to kind of start off, and I just want to kind of have a heart-to-heart, what's going on? Because there's been a lot of activity really in the past couple months, and I want to explain what we're thinking, because I think it's important, right? How many of you read the announcement in August with horror when we initially said, hey, everyone has to get off of anything but the latest IE by January of 2016? How many of you didn't even know that we'd said that? Right? So that's probably a pretty important thing to be aware of, right? Is that we have come out and said the most current version of IE on whatever platform you're on will be the only one supported. Effective, really, the end of calendar 15, but we tend to date our things by when the following Patch Tuesday is. So the subsequent Patch Tuesday, or Patch Wednesday, I guess, as it is here, is when support's going to end for, if you're on Windows 7, IE8, IE9, and IE10. So basically, the whole world has to move forward to maintain support. So the question that comes back, right, so I've had a lot of conversations, which for the first couple of weeks were me getting on the phone to be yelled at, which was awesome. Why on earth would we do that? Like, what is the problem, right? And if we look at the landscape and we think about the browser, the problem really is there is no good choice today. So if I'm a customer, right, and I'm going to choose a version of IE, which version do I choose? And it's not just the individual customers that choose, it's their vendors, and support matters. And the problem we have is that your vendors don't agree. So vendor one will say, we've got this great product, we installed it 7 years ago, unless you want to give us an extra $4 million, we're going to support IE8, and that's it, right? Pretty common. And then there's other vendors like, oh, we're all the way up to IE9. My favorite is the vendor that said we're going to have up to IE9 support by next year. I'm like, oh, so you're going to be two behind by next year, if not more. Then you have a lot of the cloud service providers who are saying you will get N or N-1, which today is 11 or 10, and nothing else is supported. That's where Office 365, that's where Google Apps, That's where Salesforce.com is, where they all live. They all want very, very current stuff so they can take advantage of it to differentiate. The problem with this fragmentation is that you literally can't make a choice that all of your vendors line up behind. You pick IE8, and the ones that depend on 11 or 10 don't work or aren't supported. Or vice versa, I pick 11, and my 8 guys aren't supported. The fragmentation may be the devil we know, but it's still the devil. So how do we fix that? And so what we want to do is create an ecosystem in which your vendors are more likely to support it because it's the only one that is itself supported. We're not deluded into thinking that it's going to absolutely work, because right now think of another platform that has support only for the latest version. Let's call that platform Java. There are still plenty of vendors who demand that you use a specific, no longer supported version of Java to get support for their product. So there's still going to be some challenges. The hope is that it becomes better. So we started with that platform of, let's try to reduce the fragmentation so you actually can envision a world in which everything works. That's the hope. The next question is, all right, so if we're going to have everyone moving forward, because most people are, let's actually take a quick poll. How many of you are on 11 today?
Very
good. Most of you. So why are you guys here? You're done. All right, so you're welcome to stay. That's fantastic, particularly if you brought beer. How many of you are on 10? Okay, 9? 8. Ooh. Right, so a fairly good representation on the lower half
hang,
of
hang
that.
On, hang on. 6?
5?
No, well, XP, you know.
We do, incidentally.
All right, less than 8.
We still have one, less than 8. If you're on Windows Vista, you could be on 7.
Yep.
Or you could still be on XP with 7 or 6.
Who here has a friend who's on less than 8? Couple more hands. Okay, a friend. There we go.
Yes, well, true story. I worked with a government customer in a country that will go nameless that was still running Windows ME on some of their systems.
Hey, that was a good operating system.
Everyone's like, wait, someone bought that? That was my reaction. Really? All right, so this is the problem. Let's set up this environment. But the next question then came in of, all right, we can just tell everyone to move forward. And their immediate response is, well, since you're making us do it, how are you going to help us? Which I think is a really good question, right? How can we help? Well, let's figure that out. And we started to kind of dissect the problem and think, well, what could we be doing? And in the space of Windows, we did a lot of work where, you know, we could set up these factory processes and churn through your apps and get the math works out really well for that, where we can get upwards of 95% accuracy with just a bunch of nerds who just take your problem and just solve them for you. It's not perfect. You still need UAT, but we do pretty well. The problem with the web, if we start taking that approach, is if we just take all of your apps and start looking at them, what do we see north of 95% of the time? We see the login page that we don't have credentials for. And the login page's behavior turns out to be not in any way predictive of whether the rest of the app works. So we literally have no idea, unless you give us credentials to every single one of your systems, whether or not they work. And guess who doesn't like to give us credentials to every single one of their systems? Everybody likes to not give us those credentials. So we can't just do it for you. So the question is, well, what could we do? How could we help? And we had the big explosion, right? The one where all of a sudden Steve Ballmer is joining your phone calls. Now it would be Satya, but he hasn't joined a call that I've been on so far. But if Ballmer joins one of your phone calls, by the way, if this ever happens to you, just get in your car and drive to the airport because you're going somewhere. You don't know where yet, but if he's joining your call, he's pissed. So we started to...
He would never get angry, would he?
He's never thrown a chair that I've been in a room, but it came up when Office 365 made its announcement of Windows support for IE8. And the world collectively gasped, oh dear God, how can that happen? We just got there. And we get that, right? Everyone who was on XP, who made the move to Windows 7, and it's a multi-year process, millions of dollars, right? This is not a cheap, easy process that you just do overnight. Everyone said, I just did that. I don't want to do that again. I'm tired. Don't make me move again. That's irritating. So we looked at how could we solve the problem. And when we looked at the technical aspect of remediation, fundamental to the remediation approach and how do you fix apps and keep them working and address compatibility in the browser is through a concept we call document modes. How many of you are familiar with document modes? So a few folks. So let me briefly illustrate what that means. Let me get over here on the browser. And I'm going to hit F10 for some reason instead of F12 because I don't know how to click buttons. Open up the developer tools. Now, the developer tools, if you're not familiar, they're actually shipped as part of it. So they're already there. Every time you install IE8 or above, we've had them for a while. We completely redid them for IE11. And incidentally, we redid them again recently for the August Windows updates contained a lot of improvements to the developer tools that just came.
You mean Microsoft updated a browser on...
Without giving it a new number?
Without giving it a new
twice.
Number.
Twice. We did it in April, too. That's when Enterprise Mode came out, which is a pretty significant...
But adding features to a browser frequently is something...
Well, this is what we came across. Customers could care less if we add features to a browser if their stuff doesn't break. Customers care a lot if their stuff breaks, right? And so this is what we know. So what we really built on was this notion of document modes. This is where we started from. And if we look at what we support in the browser today, this actually isn't quite everything that we support. Internet Explorer is not just one thing. Internet Explorer 11 has 7 different ways that it can behave. It can behave like IE5, like IE7, like IE8, like IE9, like IE10, or like IE11. And what's not shown here is another quirk. So IE5 is what we call IE5 quirks. That's a historical Internet Explorer one. We have a second one that behaves like the quirks mode you would see in other browsers, like Chrome or Firefox or Safari or Opera for the 2% of the world that uses Opera. But they're all kind of congealed on and we're trying to actually formalize this, right, which is absolutely hilarious to me. Excuse me, the standards for the non-standard compliant iteration of the browser, right? So the standards committee is looking at quirks, the non-standards part, and getting that to be consistent, because the goal is same markup. Write it once and have it run on every browser. You shouldn't have to stay on IE if you don't like it. You shouldn't have to stay on Firefox if you don't like it. You shouldn't have to stay on Chrome if you don't like it. You should be able to pick up whatever you want on any device and get them all. That's the ultimate goal. We still have a ways to go. So we can behave like all these different things. But we have to figure out how we should behave, because you can't just look at the HTML and figure it out. You have to either have someone tell you or just guess. So here's what we do. If you are in the public internet, we figure, hey, you're probably new, you're probably modern, we're going to give you Edge by default if you have a doc type, which means I want standards, or we'll give you interoperable quirks if you don't. So they will behave as much like every other browser in the world. Then we have, well, what if I put it into compatibility view, which is designed back in IE8 days to make it behave like IE7. And incidentally, it's the default behavior in the local intranet zone. We ship it that way. So by default, all of your internal stuff is capped. Can't do anything that IE7 couldn't do until you break out. Now, you can break out, and you can choose any of them. So there's this concept called XUA compatible, and I have an article on it that I defined by doing X-UA compatible. I'm not spelling very well. Durable. And hit number one, where I talk about this, you can add metadata to your applications specifying exactly how you'd like it to behave. And you can pick which of those rendering modes you want. So we can do that either as a meta tag on the page itself, or we can configure the web server to emit that as a header. It's really simple. It's very straightforward to do. And then we don't have to guess. And this will overrule your group policies.
No.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Settle down.
Yeah, OK. It's all right.
Although we actually can overrule this one with the compat view list that Microsoft distributes, because we've had to do that sometimes. If we have time, we'll talk about some of those other stories. But in essence, if you don't know about this and you leave the default, what happens is your internal developers continue to build more of the legacy web, not taking advantage of all the things it can do. So it's great for compatibility, because stuff that you've had running since IE7 or earlier just carries on working, it's bad for really getting the most of your browser. So number one important takeaway is make sure you know how to pick and choose to opt in to the docket mode that you want. And if you have that, it's incredibly powerful. So what we found when we looked at the issues we came across is that by changing the document mode, we were able to fix the overwhelming majority of issues that we came across and were troubleshooting. And by overwhelming, we are so far worldwide for anything IE8 or later at a grand total of, I think we're at 9 now. Not 9%, but the number 9 applications that we're not able to fix leveraging document modes that I've seen. It doesn't mean there aren't more in the world, but I mean, it's that kind of really small number. But here's the problem. You can't go and change these everywhere that you might want to. What if the server spitting it out is your SAP server? Are you going to be like, let me go figure out how this thing spits off headers and change it? Probably not. What if it's hosted by somebody else? So you don't even have the ability to get to the server. You can't get it there. It was hard. It required a lot of touches. And you couldn't manage it using the same mechanisms you're used to vis-a-vis group policy. So we took this feedback, really powerful mechanism, and not manageable enough, and said, how do we repackage this in a way that's more manageable? So that's how we came up with the idea for enterprise mode. And to speak of the agility that the IE team went through, we went from the idea of here's the problem, the world is screaming at us, and suddenly we're on airplanes flying everywhere, to we had a shipping enterprise mode implementation. We began in August. We shipped in April. We ran a pilot where we had a customer, the customer base of 10 for wave one, and a customer base that we targeted at 30, but because everyone had their pet customers and they were really good executives, as mentioned before, ended up with a customer base of north of 90, so about three times what we planned for and scaled for, so we kept us up late some nights, validating it out. We took the concept of docket modes, we made them packaged and more easy to use, and we also enhanced their compatibility so that even more stuff worked, because we started to tease things out once we're starting these bulk migrations, things like ActiveX control behaviors, things that were broken by some of the rendering optimizations we build in. As an example, if you go to a page like Bing, and you search for something awesome like Chris Jackson, Microsoft. I mean, you know, what could be more awesome than that? We see all these pages. See, it looks nothing like me. Boy, look how thin I am. That's fantastic. We can see these are links that are going forward. Or if you have a next, if you're reading a news story, there's a very high likelihood you're going to go to the next page. So what we do is we go ahead and go to the next page in advance, and we cache the outcome. And that way, if you click next, we can already have that pre-rendered in a separate tab and just swap the tab process and you get an instantaneous page transition and users love it. Great performance optimization. Confuses the heck out of ActiveX controls sometimes. So we turn it off in enterprise mode to make it more compatible. We had some features we deprecated across the board like CSS expressions. We got rid of them. We're like, well, no one uses these anymore. Some people do. CSS expressions come back in enterprise mode so it becomes even more compatible. And it's packaged and manageable, and we're going to walk through it. So this concept of let's make it more manageable and more compatible, that was the solution, the first solution we had, the first volley, if you will, of how do we make it cheaper, easier, better, faster. So let's kind of then work this into the concept, right? And what we're finding with customers who've done it on the beta program and subsequently is that typically a customer will find that if they are on IE8 today, which is really the target audience, so 9 and 10 people, I'm really sorry it's not hyper-optimized for you, but for 8 people, it makes it super easy to say, if it doesn't work, throw it in enterprise mode, right? Step one, right? So try it just out of the box. If it doesn't work, try enterprise mode. If it doesn't work, try using the opposite of the current setting of compatibility view, because that's the number one confusion people get. Enterprise mode and compatibility view are additive. Enterprise mode emulates IE8. IE8 included compatibility view. So behave like IE8 means we also have to have compat view in there, because if you needed compatibility view in IE8, you'll still need it in enterprise mode. And if you didn't need it, you still don't need it when you're in enterprise mode. They work together. All right, so number one thing. When we people get that and have done it right, what we find is that almost everything can be made to work very quickly using group policy to spread it out. And if anything doesn't work, it's on the order of just a handful. There have been two customers so far that have said, I'm in the 10s, 20s, 30s in terms of the apps that don't work. One of them I got on the phone with. I'm like, oh, so you systematically disabled all of compatibility view. That's why everything's breaking. You need it. If you need it on 8, you'll still need it in enterprise mode. They're like, oh, sorry, we just did it wrong. And now they're back to where we expect. 1, 2 off, things that don't work. The other customer I'm going to visit when I get back. And I'll expect to probably find something very similar, but we'll find out. Really, really successful. So let's talk about, right, so this remediation technology, how do we drive this approach? How can we help? We're still open for ideas and other ways we can help. So if you've got any ideas, I am all ears. But what we're saying today to folks is start off by really deeply understanding the scope of the problem and how you're going to test it. Because the number one problem we find is, where do you start? Hey, I need to test all of my web apps, right? Every single one that anyone ever browses to.
That's easy.
That's not a problem at all. Well, actually, we've measured that with a few people, because we've had people who've gone like, I'm going to measure what's happening on the proxy server and see everything that happens. And it tends to happen on the order of, I'm going to go with an average of hundreds of millions of unique URLs that you see if you collect everything. Right, and if you start doing the math on that, right, so let's say I even have 200 million, and I just want to get that list down. I want to rationalize it, right, to something that I can sort of figure out what I need to actually test, because there's no standard in the URL format that defines an app. So you have to look at every one of them. You look at every one of them. Let's say you spend, how long would you look at it? 5 seconds?
Yeah, let's say that.
5 seconds a pop, going really, really fast, burning through these things. So it's going to take you that many seconds, or that many minutes, or that many hours, or that many days, or that many years to get through your list.
That's a lot of overtime.
Yeah, that's, and let's say this many years, so let's actually divide that into days and hours. So that many, 8. Times 365, I need to divide
myself. That's just hard.
Times 8 times 365, yeah, so that many. So that many hours, and I don't know, how much does a typical Avanade consultant charge per hour?
At least 18 hours a day.
Cost per hour.
Oh.
For your brand new guys, right out of college. Expert guys, we're not going to get in.
Let's go.
I'll do MCS if you want to. I'll go 310 an hour.
All right.
No problem. So we just need a small budget of $28 million to produce that for you. In 31 years, if you want just one guy.
Approved.
So you can't do it that way. So when we start thinking about the process, right, so we have this fairly straightforward way, you can't just sit there and say, go find everything. Instead, we need to start segregating our apps into managed, supported, unsupported, and banned. Not everyone has banned, right? But this sort of that general hierarchy.
Google.com. Sorry, did I say that? No, I didn't say that.
See, someone was using that here yesterday. It's like, what an odd choice of places. We're doing it on their Mac, though, so it's okay. And then within managed, to then start tiering them into, say, gold, silver, and bronze. I like the Olympic medal terminology tends to resonate with people. It kind of makes it stick. But if I start thinking of it that way, I don't need to find every place that people go to, because the web is the ultimate shadow IT. It's you're a navigation away from a new app that you're using. It's really easy to have that proliferation get huge. You just need to figure out what you care about. And the manage are the ones that you're going to commit to looking at before you go. And this commitment based upon risk, and that varies. So when I look at moving from IE6 to IE8, the failure rate that we saw averaged about 25%, mostly because of that doc type bug. So you're probably going to look at a fair bit of stuff, because there's a fair amount of risk there. Subsequently, right, if you've not gone through and added tags, that drops down precipitously into the 2 and 3% range for each subsequent upgrade. It's not zero, but as, you know, as they say, right, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? It's a number, 2 to 3%, where some people are much worse and some people are at zero. It's a lot of variability, but there's less risk now. And as the risk continues to drop lower, then there's fewer things that have to be actively checked. But in the managed list, there's going to be some that are gold. No matter what kind of change you're doing, I'm doing a full regression on this. Because if this thing fails, I get called before my government. I go to jail. I go out of business. Right? Those are going to get tested no matter what. The next tier, it's like, you know what? I can have the technical team take a glance, make sure it's okay, and then move along. Whereas bronze may be, you know what, I'm just going to have the user sort of self-check and we're going to move forward. Supported, I'm going to wait for them to call me. I'm not looking at them at all beforehand. Unsupported, even if you call me, I'm hanging up. And banned, if you call me, I'm really going to block it at the proxy, right? As we, the change in behavior. And this process that we see is the only meaningful way to approach it. So we wanted to build the total solution to fit the process. As opposed to building technology for technology's sake, we took the process to build the solution. So the first part of the solution, managed, how do I get the applications out there and be able to support crowdsourcing, that's what we want to do with that. So let's kick it over to Alan to kind of walk through the actual implementation, because we're sitting there yammering up and talking. Let's actually see, oh, you're seven.
Eight.
Let's actually
seven,
see seven. What it takes, see what we've built,
all right,
and how it can solve the problem. Alan.
So the problem that Chris was talking about there is, like, if you pay someone to do this, it's going to take a long time for them to do that. But when you do something like crowdsourcing, you can actually get your users and use your users to help you. Strange concept, I know. But with Internet Explorer Enterprise Mode, we have an option to enable for the users so that they can actually toggle on and off Enterprise Mode as they see fit. Now, this is not something that I would be sending an email to all staff about, because what they'll do is they'll go to every website and toggle it on and off all day long, going, this is great, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm turning it off. No, no, no.
Actually, true story. If you notice, we used to have a little broken page button in IE8 and IE9 that you can quickly turn on or off compatibility view. We took that off because a huge number of calls into support were, this website doesn't work, and it was because they'd hit that button, which is conveniently a few pixels away from the refresh button, on accident and had no idea that they had self-destroyed their own compatibility.
That's why the page is broken.
So that's why we hit it. Yeah,
yes.
This is not for everybody. Why it's for people who are participating, yes, in the crowdsourcing activity.
So this option is actually off by default. And if you've got Internet Explorer, the way that you would need to turn it on, you first need to go and go to the menu bar. Now, you probably send an email to your favorite users, and you all have favorite users, the ones that don't complain and the ones that politely tell you something's broken but not yell at their manager, who then escalates it to the CEO and it comes back into you. They just go to you directly, oh, by the way, this isn't working, can you please fix? And they're very nice. So you go into Tools here, and there's no option there yet. Right? The option is by default hidden. All right? So you do need to turn this on. This is not something that by default the users can go in and just start messing with.
Yeah, because right, everyone has it. It's shipped as part of the April Windows updates.
Yeah. So if you've installed Internet Explorer 11 and you have the April update applied, and if you don't have the April update applied, you should apply that because there'll be other issues.
Or any subsequent one, then we go attend a security talk.
So the way you enable this is, surprise, surprise, group policy. So there is a group policy, new group policy setting, which is installed when you install the update. It updates the ADMX files. And let me zoom in here. Here's one I configured earlier. So it's a user setting. It's under administrative templates, Internet Explorer. Let the users turn on enterprise mode from the tools menu. Okay, and I've got that setting as enabled. I'll come back to this URL in just a sec, but here's one I've created earlier. So I'm just going to enable this option. So there's a group policy I created earlier. I linked it to the user's OU. This user's name, Alan. That's a great name. And this is, say, your corporate intranet site, right? Maybe it looks something a lot different than this, but let's just use your imagination. This is your corporate intranet site. So what I need to do is I need to go in, next group policy update. So now it's applying the option to enable this enterprise mode feature. So the users, after the group policy update happens, which is, you know, every 180 minutes, can go tools, and then they have this option here now called enterprise mode. All right, so that's a new option in the tools menu. So if I click that, I've now enabled enterprise mode for this wonderful website. However, this website is pretty standard HTML compliant, and so rendering it in IE8 mode or rendering it in Edge mode, it looks pretty much the same, okay? But let's say, for example, you have a HR website because, you know, HR have massive amounts of budget to keep their website update and standards compliant, and it looks something like this. You also notice it's running on Windows NT 3.5, so it's probably in a cupboard somewhere. But the page just doesn't quite work right in Internet Explorer 11. And of course, as Chris said, you could go in there and you could add the XUA compatible tag to the website, but it's an NT 3.5 server and no one knows the password to it, and you just really have to have this website running. So these users that you've sent the email to know that there's this new option here, and they can click this option here, Enterprise Mode. Yay! My HR website is now fixed. Of course, they haven't paid the developer to get rid of the "sorry, this is still under construction" logo animated GIF because, you know, it's dating back from 1995 and they were all the rage back then. But it's working as you expect to see it in Internet Explorer 8. As you can see, there's this nice building here. So user knows that that website is under Internet Explorer Enterprise mode. If they happen to go and click on it, it's like enterprise mode is currently on. So what this is doing is basically putting the browser into the Internet Explorer 8 enterprise mode. Okay? So, but I mentioned that we need to crowdsource this. So how do I know if the user is clicking this option? Well, you could tell them to say, well, whenever you click this button, you need to send me an email and I'll collate that email information. That might not happen all the time. Users may forget. Maybe. Or what you could do is, like I said before, I'll come back to this URL later. You can specify a URL that the browser will actually send a message to collect. So you can actually record whenever the user clicks on that enterprise mode, and it will tell you the URL that was current in the browser at the time when they clicked on that. So how do you collect that information? How do you crowdsource? How do you use and abuse your users to get the information you need to construct this list of websites in your organization that you might not even know of? Because, you know, let's face it, you know, the website might be used once a year. Maybe it's an end of financial year thing, or maybe it's an end of month thing, and, you know, you don't know about it all the time. It's just kind of been ticking along. So I've enabled this. The browser is now configured to send a HTTP web form request. So similar to how when you submit a form on a web page, it sends, is it a post or a get? It's post, isn't it? It's like a web form.
I forget the verb.
One of those. And it submits it to the URL that you specify. So over here, I have Internet Explorer, IIS, sorry, not Internet Explorer. I have IIS installed on this server here. This is also my domain controller. No, I do not recommend that you install this on your domain controller. This is just my lab, but let's say it's just a web server. And say, for example, it might be hosting other websites, so you may want to put this on a custom port number, right? Because you don't want people just to browse to this location. All right, not that it's going to give you much. So here, for example, I have the website. It's listening on port 81. I have logging enabled. So this is standard IIS logging. I've selected a couple of fields. I haven't selected them all. I don't need all this information. But basically it's saying date, time, client IP address, URI query. So that's the important one. And then what I have in the website itself is an ASP file. And this is a highly, highly complicated multi-page ASP file with one line. So what this is just a bit of JavaScript that basically takes the response that the browser is sending, captures it, and appends it to the IIS log file. You can then use this log file. But how exactly does this look? So if I've got Internet Explorer open, I also have here Fiddler open. Let me just clear my logs here because, you know, Internet Explorer is doing something. If I go in here and I unselect, and then it's broken, and then I turn it on, and it's not broken. You'll notice here that when I did that, that it actually, the browser itself, actually submitted a request to this URL that I specified. All right, so in real time, as soon as the user clicks that, so you can watch them turn it on, you can watch them turn it off. It's submitting that in real time to the web server that I've specified via group policy. All right, so if I go have a look back to the web server here, I go to the log files, and this is just Internet Explorer log files. What I'm just going to do here, because I want to look at the files straight away, is I'm just going to do an IIS reset. Now, the reason I do this is that IIS writes the log files asynchronously, so the logs don't actually get written immediately, but if I do an IIS reset, it flushes those logs, so that information is there now. So here's some I did earlier, but you can see here, in UTC time, here is myself turning on and then off, and then so I went to the website, I turned it on, yeah, nothing happened. So I turned it off again. But then I went to the HR website, and lo and behold, the HR website, I've turned it on, and I never turned it off again. All right. So for this user, the user has elected to keep that website incompatibility or in enterprise mode. Now, that's a really strong indication for you to say, well, if the user who I've asked to do this has left in enterprise mode, it's probably working in enterprise mode because they continue to use the website. Now, I know the URL, and I can go to that website myself and I can look at it. But of course, you have a lot of websites in your organization. And this file can be very long. I could take it. It's got semicolons in it. I can take that log file and I can paste it into Excel and I can do it all handcrafted. But there's also another tool that is on GitHub.
Yeah, so this is one of the challenges we have is people viewed it as being a very incomplete solution. So the sample, and Alan posted this on his blog, it actually came from one of our escalation engineers who used it to test some of the functionality. And Alan politely said, can I have it, please? And I said, sure.
Yes.
And connected the two of them together, and Adam's a terrific guy. But we also know that this is not the most complete solution. And so Nicole Birdie, who's a program manager on the Internet Explorer team, she's one of those young 20-something-year-olds that's like 900 times smarter than you, the really irritating people like that. She's one of those. I'm from Ivy League school and blah, blah, blah. Phenomenal. Did this in her spare time. Built up this sample, and you can download all of the source code from GitHub, and it uses ASP.NET MVC to write it into a SQL database, right? Which is a little bit more scalable. You can start doing some analysis because that analysis turns out to be relatively important. You still have a problem with scale. If you just give it to everybody, right? This is why picking the right audience is correct. Then you have tons and tons of data, and you've got to figure out what's meaningful, which is why sort of targeting the policy at your select users as much as you possibly can, so that then you know that the data is actionable and people actively trying to help you as opposed to fiddling around in menus, then you can start to do some analysis with that database, right? And that's what we intended to do. We have a sample. We didn't want to build a product because you may not use IIS. You may not use SQL Server. We didn't want to count you out. This has to scale to everybody in the world. So we wanted to give you a super simple sample. We wanted to give you a Microsoft Stack sample because a lot of people who are using IE are very Microsoft Stack centric to get you started. And if there's other things that we can be doing, we're curious to hear what that is, how you've taken what we've given you, because now that you know that it's there.
So the important thing is to know that if you are turning on enterprise mode and you want to do the crowdsourcing, you have to have some way to collect that information. It doesn't have to be IIS, but you need to collect the information. We don't need to. If you don't want to, you could go to that option and tell the user to email you whenever they click the button.
Yeah. And if you only have the April patch Tuesday, you haven't taken any subsequent ones, turning that option on will actually cause your browser to crash. Oops.
Don't do that.
We patched it. So take the May patch and you're good. Just the April one, it will probably leave you a little bit sad.
But if you do need to do the crowdsourcing, you need some way to collect that information. So once you've got that information, you've gone through, you've analyzed the log files, you've looked at it, you've identified a couple of websites you may not even know about, you've gone through and you've gone, this website, guess what? It works really well in enterprise mode. I'm really liking it. I need to push that out to all my users. And so how do I do that? How do I complete the circle? So the next step is you've got the information, you know what websites are on your hit list, you go, oh, I want to make these websites enterprise mode. How do you do that? So there is another group policy setting that was, of course, that was released. It also got released in the update, which is use the enterprise mode, i.e. website list. Now this enterprise mode, i.e. website list, is an XML file. It's an XML file the browser will pull down. You can host it wherever you want. It's an internal URL. So, or it doesn't have to be internal, but you host it basically yourself. It's your XML compatibility view. So you know there still is an option in Internet Explorer called compatibility view. And of course that view was also backed in. There was an option that it says pull down the updates from Microsoft to render it. So this is like your own internal compatibility or / enterprise mode list. So you yourself can easily have a list of websites that you want to force into enterprise mode.
Yeah, and so a little bit of background on the manageability, some of the goals that we had are the compatibility view manageability limited you to top-level domain only. And we actually experienced this at Microsoft. We still had some legacy SharePoint 2007. You put, you know, some site buried in Microsoft.com into compatibility view so that works correctly with IE5 quirks, and guess what? All of Microsoft.com got jacked into compatibility view. There's no way of going into smaller granularity. And pretty resoundingly, everyone said, that doesn't work for us. So let me go to different subsets of what I want. Give me that granularity. It's also XML. There's been a lot of feedback of, why isn't this just in the policy and pushed out? Why do I have to have a separate XML file? And a lot of that is because, A, we were figuring out what all features we were going to build into it, and B, we might still be extending what you can do with that XML configuration as we look for more ways to help you with the compatibility issue. So that's why it's separate from the policy and as a file.
But XML is really easy to handcraft, of course, and so you can obviously just go in and crack open Notepad and start modifying this XML file yourself. Of course, you know, everyone loves modifying XML via hand, don't they? So, yeah, not, no, yes, there's a couple of nods. Okay, well, if you're really that, you want to give yourself all that pain, you can go in and start handcrafting this XML file yourself. However, thankfully, Microsoft also released a tool that will actually help you create this XML file.
I'll give you $1 if you can guess who wrote the sample for the site list manager.
Me?
Nicole Birdie.
Oh, there we
same
go.
Person, just
same
wrote
person.
This, also in her spare time.
Here it is. So this is the Enterprise Mode Site List Manager. So Google this on Bing. Just Google Enterprise Mode Site List Manager on Bing. And you'll find the tool and you'll be able to download it and install it. So what this tool basically allows you to do is have a list of URLs. So the list of my URLs, the website was nico2.corp.local. And I'm going to throw that whole website into enterprise mode. So I'm then going to go file. I can either export or I can put comments also there about, you know, the website, you know, HR do not have any money to fix this website. Right, so you can have notes, and you can export that out, which keeps the notes in, so you can know why, or you can put in, you know, such and such will remediate this website by 2020. Or, you know, something like that. And so you can go save to XML, though. This is now exporting it in the version that is readable by the browser. I go save to XML. Do I want to replace it? Yes. And so if you notice here, here's the old version, has version 1. And if I reopen this file, I have a new version. It's now version 2. And it's automatically added that URL into the list. So what I need to do now is I need to enable this group policy. Say you've crowdsourced your users for a while, you've got the information you require, you think, yeah, that's pretty good. Maybe you still just have this setting applied to some select users in your organization, but for the vast majority, all you want to do is push this list out to them and not have the enterprise mode feature enabled for them. So all I'm doing here is enabling this use the enterprise mode, i.e. Website list. I'm going to just close my browser here. So if I go back, notice here at the top level of the domain, it's not in enterprise mode. I'm going to close the browser, do another GP update. So this is refreshing the policy. It's applying that it should now go out and pull down Internet Explorer. It should go out to the website, go out to that URL that we configured, and it should pull down that list. Okay. So when I launch Internet Explorer for the first time, The very first time I opened the website, it actually pulls down the XML file pretty much straight away. Now, hopefully, yes. So you notice there, it actually launched it initially as normal mode, but as soon as it pulled down that XML file and I hit refresh, it's now thrown the entire website and domain name into this compatibility view. So I go to the HR website. HR is now a subsite of the complete domain name. Of course, it's also in enterprise mode. But let's say there's a part of the HR team that actually has budget to do something, and they actually have a subsite of the HR, maybe it's recruitment or something like that, because, you know, they're all new age fangled.
HR with budget is a very implausible story.
I know. But the recruiting people might, you know, like, we have LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff like that. I'll take the question in just a sec. Is that okay? All right. And then let's say you have a subsite, and the subsite actually needs HTML5. Like, this is saying your browser does not support the video tag because Internet Explorer 8 didn't support the HTML5 video tag standard. So what we need to do now is how do I actually specify this individual URL or individual subsite and have that render as standards compliant, but have the main website render as enterprise mode or IE8 compliant. Do you want to ask your question now?
Yeah, so what happens is, once you get it, right, this is a really common question, once I have it, let's say I get off the corporate network, do I have to go fetch it every time? And the answer is no. What we do, the first time the policy comes up, we go get it straight away. Subsequent times, we'll check it. If we can actually get there, we then look at the version number. If the version number is different, right, so another FAQ, everyone's like, the sample we put on the web said version equals 3, so they figured that must be the version of the XML syntax, and it's not. It's the version number of your file. If it's different, we'll take down the rest. If it's not different, we stop downloading it. So every time we can connect, we look whether we should upgrade it by looking at the version. If we should, we grab the new version. That is a delayed start after that first time. It takes about 60 to 70 seconds to get that. And the reason why is because we don't want to get in the startup path for IE. Otherwise, you're sitting there clicking it and waiting for a network traversal to see if there's a new site list. But what we find in practice is that people's initial experimentation incorrectly distorts their opinions of what it's going to mean in production. Because the reality is, you're not going to straight away go right to the broken website most of the time. Nor are you going to be constantly adding things and changing things as you are when you're building it. So for a typical end user, it's I go and I get the site list and my stuff just works when I go there. And it'll have already gotten there beforehand, but we don't want to get in the startup path. So we do go and fetch it, we save it, it persists. If you clear the cache, it doesn't go away, so that you can then use it, you get off the corporate network, it's still there and still being applied in that way.
Okay. So what I have here is I've taken that URL, that sub URL, that I now want to render in default mode or standards mode. And so I've actually just typed it here, the URL's there. If you actually type it incorrectly, it does actually validate that URL is correct. Hang on, it's like HTML blah. This is just an interesting thing I've picked up recently. We've tried to validate this URL. It's incorrect. Are you sure? That's a really nice test, actually, to make sure the URL is actually working.
Like I said, one of those people that's too smart.
Yeah. So we got HTML. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say I want this in default mode. So this sub URL specifically, all right, subsection of the website, I want as default mode. And here in enterprise mode, the rest of the website, I want to just render as IE8. So I hit save. I then export this as XML again to the same file. So again, if I go back to that file, the XML file, as Chris was saying, it comes and it will poll for an update. It doesn't actually look at the entire file, the content, to know if that update's there. It looks at this, the version number there. If this version number changes in the XML...
That can be lower, too. It doesn't have to be higher. It just has to be different.
It will actually go, oh, I have a new one after like 65 seconds. And it will know that this sub URL here is going to need to be rendered in standards mode. So, got that. Okay. Let's go back to here. All right. Removal. Now, I don't need to do a group policy update because I haven't updated the group policy. I've just updated the XML file. All right, so let me close this. So notice there, it's still rendering standards mode. You're going to open the browser. Now, notice this first time, to come back to that question that was just answered, it hasn't pulled immediately down that internet that XML file because it already has it cached. All right, so you notice here on the left-hand side, okay, and now the clock is running. So we now have 65 seconds. Now, after 65 seconds, if I go here and then I click on this, it still doesn't work, right? It still doesn't work because it hasn't actually polled that XML file yet to see if there's an update. It's waiting that back off period, as Chris said, to pull that down. Yes, question? I am pointing at Chris.
It was just a matter of finding the right delay, because there are quite a few delayed start events that happened in the browser, and it was finding a spot that we could put it in where we'd be reasonably sure there wouldn't be something else running at the same time. It's a perf optimization. And since it should be an infrequent thing, we're just like, let's find a spot where it can optimize both perceived and actual performance.
And just think about it too. Usually you open your default web page and it's your corporate intranet. Hopefully your corporate intranet website isn't one of the sites. Well, it could be that needs this enterprise mode, but of course, you know, as soon as the user opens IE for the first time, they'll cache that, and at the very worst, it's just going to be the one time. Now, bang, there it is. So notice, after 65 seconds, it went off and it pulled down that XML file. I'm really glad that worked. It would have been really bad if it didn't.
Me too.
So now that I'm not even going to close the browser here. I'm going to go to the HR website and I'm going to click on this video tag, and yes. So, here's a great video of two guys last year talking about Internet Explorer at TechEd, but let's just say this was a HR website. So basically, it shows that this is a HTML5 video tag, website, and it shows how we have the sub URL. There's no blue box, blue building there to say you're in enterprise mode. But when I go back to the HR website, there it is there. All right, so I can granularly apply enterprise mode to entire websites, but I can also apply it to just specific URLs. So I can either include or exclude enterprise mode to specific URLs. All right, this is something that I've always wanted, rather than the entire domain, because compatibility view was the entire domain, and as Chris was saying, that was a bit of a painful thing. So this is completing the entire feedback loop. You've gone to the users, you've asked them to find the websites by clicking that enterprise mode. You've collected that information about enterprise mode, and then you've basically validated that information yourself, whatever means necessary, looking through the log files, and you agree with the users, the intelligence of the crowd, and then you've then pushed that out to your users. You can keep this on, again, like I said, to some selective users. Right, you can apply this the enterprise mode enabling to just some selected users. So, say a website again only every 6 months is used, you might find that at a later stage it comes in and you hadn't captured it before, and then you can update this XML. But you'll find probably most of these websites very quickly. You'll get a lot of sites added straight away. But then if the developers eventually get some budget, or HR, shock horror, actually get some budget and move from NT3.5 and update the HTML on their website and go to a more standards compliant, you can go back and you can edit the XML and you can throw it back into default mode, which is just standards compliant.
So let's play, that's a couple of FAQs I want to address in that context, right? So one FAQ is, if I specify via XUA compatible to give me IE11 mode, will I break out of enterprise mode? And the answer is no, right? That will break you out of compatibility view, but it will not break you out of enterprise mode. Enterprise mode is designed to behave like IE8 did. IE8, if it saw IE equals 11, would say, oh, I don't have an 11, I'll just give you the highest I've got and give you IE8 mode. So it's a compatibility optimization to behave like IE8 wherever possible. So there is no escape hatch from enterprise mode without removing it from the policy. The other one is, how many of these can I have? I may want to put it in a lot of places. So the one thing I suggest is, you know, find out the way to phrase it so that you capture as many things as you can to keep the list there. We have had customers go as high as 40,000 entries in their XML list. The browser handles that just fine. The site list manager does not, unless you have a machine with a lot of memory, because it uses a DOM. So it has to hold the entire list in memory at one time. And it pretty much blows up after a few thousand. We tested it personally to about 8,000, and we had customers tested in production to the tune of 40,000 plus. So it gets pretty big if it needs to. But our recommendation is, you know, try not to make it big if you can, because that just sort of represents your workload of what you like to ideally eventually modernize. But the goal is to separate when you have to change the code from when you have to change the browser. So you get to choose when you modernize. Was there a question? You can just remove it from the XML and then change the version number, and we'll update and stop putting it in there.
As long as you didn't have the entire domain that was that sub URL also in enterprise mode, so long as there's not like a higher rule in that list, that would obviously inherit down. Other than that, yeah, just remove it and it falls back.
I wanted to quickly show, you know, I know we had some demo websites. I wanted to pull up an actual website. Does anyone here work in healthcare? So a couple folks. How many of you heard of Centricity? GE Centricity has a market share that's pretty high in the U.S. and worldwide is reasonable. This is an actual real-life production website in use by Northwestern University Memorial Hospital in Chicago. And it is one that there literally was no way to fix it. This is one of the eight apps that docket modes can't fix, and enterprise mode does, because the thing it was doing specifically is it's looking at the version of the JavaScript engine. So this, we actually had to, in enterprise mode, lie about the version of the script engine that we use, and that actually does allow it to pass that test and go through and propose to install it. Now, that being said, I have a session on Emmet going on later today. Emmet doesn't particularly like what they're doing in their solution, so it blocks it, but it gets me past those checks and gets the site working. So that's a real-life production website. And we have a couple minutes left, so I wanted to touch on the other announcement that we made that has some people thinking.
That's my website.
Actually,
very quickly, if you think editing a group policy to test this is a bit much and you just want to test it on your machine back at your office, you can just edit your local group policy object, all right? So those ADM files are there. So you can just go straight into your local group policy editor, edit your local group policy object, and enable this just on a per machine by machine base or per user by per user basis as well. That's in, you know, yep. If you want to just quickly test it. So there you go.
Very good. The other thing I think worth mentioning is we also announced in August that we're going to start blocking ActiveX controls. And here's the rollout for this. The August patch Tuesday puts in the code that allows us to block them. And by older ActiveX controls, we put the emphasis on Java. Because that's what really puts people in the most danger today, is using old versions of Java. It's the number one attack vector being actively used by bad guys, because they know that companies standardize on a particular version and don't upgrade. So all they do is they target the vulnerabilities that are at this point widely publicized and go after it, and they're successful nearly all the time. And so how do we help protect against that? You know, and most people do it inadvertently. Well, we allow you to stop it. So we release the code to do it, but the code reads, guess what? An XML list. The XML list hadn't come out yet. So even though the patch Tuesday contained it, it wasn't blocking anything yet. The XML list starts getting published effective this month, so patch Tuesday's up. So we're going to start publishing it, and we're going to start blocking it. If you're an enterprise, I will argue that you probably shouldn't care if you've zoned correctly, because this blocking excludes the local intranet and trusted sites zone. So what it should do for your users, for the crusty old version of Java that you have to use because of the stupid app that you're angry at, right, will still work if it's in the local intranet or the trusted site zone. It's not going to be shut down. But since you have that attack vector running on your machine, we will block it when your users are off running around on the generic internet, because that's going to be in the internet zone and they won't be able to get there. So it shouldn't stop you, assuming you've zoned correctly, but it should actually help make you safer and feel slightly better about the fact that you have that crusty old version of Java.
However, some people don't like change. So there is also a group policy that actually goes in and actually says, turn off blocking of out-of-date ActiveX controls for Internet Explorer. Yeah. So this policy, did you mention that it also applies to Internet Explorer 8, the ActiveX blocking? According to group policy, it does. I'm pretty sure I read it. Anyway, so it actually applies to not just Internet Explorer 11, it also applies to IE 8. So the policy actually can be turned off. So the blocking, if you really need to and you're really worried, but you shouldn't have to be. But you're an administrator and you like control, and I don't blame you because control is nice. So if you want to...
Well, let's go in and let's emphasize this, though, as long as we're... talking about good, why would we consider blocking Java? Oh, I don't know, because it represents nearly all of what exploit kits are doing. So turning off the thing that helps protect you against that incredibly probable eventuality, think twice about doing that.
Yeah.
It should help make you more secure. Most secure is getting up to date entirely, even Java, right? We cooperate. This is not us against Oracle.
Yeah.
They themselves say in bright red letters,
yes,
don't run the old stuff for the love of God and all that is holy. Get off of it.
Yes.
It's your app vendors that keep you there.
Yeah.
So anyway, with that...
Thank you. Hopefully, you are now empowered or feel much better about getting off crusty IE8, not that I would call it crusty, but moving to Internet Explorer 11. Try your own websites, try enterprise mode on a couple of test machines, see what works. So your mileage may vary.
Yep, I'm at AppCompatGuy. I'm also AppCompatGuy at Microsoft.com.
And I'm Alan Birchall on Twitter, so please follow me on that. Or if you want to go to Facebook and do the social thing, group policy is what you search for on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/group policy or my website, grouppolicy.biz. Thank you.
Thank you all.